Trending Now with Josh Arnold. I'm Rick Moore, along with our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, and our host, of course, Josh Arnold. Good morning.
Good morning.
What's up?
Well, it's cool out, but it's clear. We're inching closer and closer to Groundhog Day.
Very depressing. I love winter, and it's just going by so fast. We had a little cold weather. Not too bad.
They're talking about 2 snowstorms next week. You should be very happy.
Well, you know, it'd be nice if they had the snow up country. I don't need the snow down here. Story also I saw in today's paper. I don't know if it's on your agenda today, but the city council, or at least the city of Gloucester, not able to reimburse those car owners whose cars were destroyed during the flooding. And most unfortunate. I wonder, you know, I know that the CAO of the city talked a couple of weeks ago about possibly looking for aid outside. Have you heard anything?
Well, no, but it would seem to me that the city is liable here. And because
why would the city be liable?
Because the city has its own emergency snow alert, and they let people know to go to parking lots in schoolyards and didn't let them know in advance that one of them was in the floodplain. And so there's a reasonableness to go to a parking lot in the floodplain if you don't know it's a floodplain. And I would think a very smart attorney would say, hey, you have an obligation to let them know that there's some risk if you put your car there. And I would think anybody that files suit against the city the insurance company that covers the city would have to pay the claim.
Well, we'll find out. I'm sure that's going to happen.
Yeah.
On a brighter note, what's up for today?
Well, I have Paul Lundberg, the city council president for Gloucester, and then Ken Hecht, who's the first in his first term as a Ward 2 city councilor in Gloucester, and then also the superintendent of schools from Gloucester. So, lots to talk about.
Okay, we'll check in on all that in just a minute. We'll be right back.
People come in, take a seat. You're really in for a treat at Sylvan Street. A great place to eat and drink and meet with family and friends at Sylvan Street. Treat you right, day or night. Satisfy your appetite. Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Catch a game with friends, meet for lunch, cocktails after work, or a romantic dinner for two. Whatever your plan to do it at Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury. See you at Sylvan Street.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. Our company has been proud to have supported high school sports on the North Shore for more than 30 years. Our student athlete program recognizes championship performance in the classroom and on the field. Moynihan Lumber is also committed to championship performance when it comes to meeting all your building and home improvement needs. And if you're planning to change your kitchen, please visit our kitchen cabinet showrooms at any of our 3 locations. In Beverly, North Reading, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at moynihanlumber.com.
Stronger, faster, tougher. When you need the MVP of community banks, look no further than the Institution for Savings. With 14 full-service offices throughout the North Shore, we have MVP rates and an all-star team to serve you. Bank from the ball field with our 24/7 online application apps, internet banking, mobile deposit, and more. Institution for Savings, your winning team. Visit institutionforsavings.com. Member FDIC, DIF, Equal Housing Lender.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our first guest is Paul Lundberg, who is the president of the Gloucester City Council. Paul, welcome to the program.
Josh, thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Well, we're hoping to have council presidents from several of the North Shore communities on every other month or so, just to kind of fill us in on what's happening on the North Shore. So let's start with Gloucester and... give us, you're the new council leader. You've had to appoint people to the standing committees, help to orientate some of the new members, and set goals and objectives and a direction for how the city council as the legislative branch is going to function for the next 2 years. Share some of those details with us if you can.
Sure. Sure, Josh. First of all, you know, we had an election in November, and we were it was good, robust election. We were on the city council. We had we have two new councilors, Ken Hecht from who is now going to represent Ward 2, and Jen Holgram, who was a newcomer, and she was elected as councilor at large. Both of these two new councilors are really great additions to our team. They kind of represent the standards that we have for the Gloucester City Council of caring about the constituents and doing your homework. So they're a welcome addition. We have three standing committees, Budget and Finance, Ordinance and Administration, and Planning and Development. For Budget and Finance, Melissa Cox, who had previously held the chairman's role on that committee 2 terms ago, has returned as chairman of Budget and Finance. So she brings a wealth of experience, and she's joined by Councilor Memhard as vice chair and Ken Hecht, our new counselor. Ordinance and Administration pretty much remains the same. Council Vice President Steve LeBlanc, who represents Ward 3, is the chair, along with Councilors Nolan and O'Hara. And on Planning and Development, which was the committee that I chaired as a counselor, Val Gilman has stepped up to become the chair of that committee. Jen Holgram is on that committee, and I will be a member. City Council President just is generally a member of one of the committees, not one of the ranking officers. So we've got a great team in place. We have two huge issues that all three standing committees will be involved in, the Fuller School project and the retail marijuana issue. So those are the council's prepared to do those issues and others, and we got a good team. So that's how things stand with our council, Josh.
Well, good. Now the taking the marijuana issue first, there are a lot of complications with that, not all of which are within your jurisdiction to address. But I'm sure you and I talked before the program about what some of those issues are. One of those is, even though the state law has changed, the federal laws are still very much in play. One of those federal, one of the aspects of that is the transfer of money. So even if you people zone, create a zone in a sense of policy on where recreation or where marijuana for either medicinal or recreational purposes can be purchased, there's another whole layer of what happens to the money that they spend, because you can't put it in the bank, because the banks are not able to take money that came from the sale of drugs or things that are considered drugs at the federal level, not the state level.
Well, that's right. There are so many complications to this situation, Josh, that it's hard to know where to begin, especially when for the cities and towns who are kind of, you know, left with the practicalities of implementing or regulating of this whole situation. The first one that you've mentioned, the banking system, you know, that does butt right up against the federal determination that marijuana is still an illegal drug.
Yeah.
So any bank that is a federally insured bank can't handle the funds from those transactions, which you know, makes for a huge practical issue. The practical issue that I'm more concerned about for the city is these that medical under the state law, applicants wishing to open retail establishments in the cities and towns will apply for a state license, not a local license, a state license. And the state will grant those licenses based on whatever criteria the Cannabis Control Commission is determining. They have some preliminary rules, and they're due to put their final rules out by March 15th. So we're kind of waiting to see what those are. But the second thing is that, you know, for us, we have the zoning issue to deal with. Once a license is granted, where can can these shops open up? And that is left to the cities and towns, and that's what we're wrestling right now with. Is there an appropriate zoning mechanism that we have that takes into consideration the community's concerns about having these retail establishments in the midst of our community? We have a task force that was appointed by the mayor, which is made up of department heads, the police chief, the head of our Department of Health, our planning director, our chief lawyer, and includes Councillor Gilman and school committee members, Kathy Clancy and Melissa Texera, and they've been trying to work through the specific issues, and we're just trying to figure out what kind of zoning and regulations we want to have, and we are only at the beginning of this, Josh, and it's going to be there's a lot of ground to cover, notwithstanding the thing you mentioned most, which is the federal prohibition against marijuana. So,
right. So moving on to the other issue you brought up was the Fuller School project. Snapshot of where that is now, and what are the issues that have to be sorted out?
Right. The project applicants have applied for the special city council permit, which is required for them to go forward. We have already done the zoning part of it, which allows for the mixed use of the YMCA, a residential component, and a retail store component. So that zoning thing's in place. Now the special city council permit, and under our ordinance, any development which includes more than 11 residential units must have a affordable housing component of up to 30% of the units, 20% of the units, which translates into 30 units of affordable housing. The ordinance also allows applicants to say if providing affordable housing is a financial hardship to the project, that they can either ask to develop those affordable units off-site or pay into the city's affordable housing trust fund a fee that's determined by a formula that's in the ordinance. This applicant has chosen to say they have a hardship and they would like to pay the fee into the housing trust fund. The issue that a lot of people have with that doesn't produce any actual units of affordable housing. The applicant has said they have a financial hardship. The city has hired its own consultant in accordance with the ordinance, and the city's consultant said they do not have a financial hardship. So there is going to be one of the big issues for the council to resolve is that. Our Planning and Development Committee has a meeting on Monday to hear both of the city's consultant on hardship as well as the applicants. That's going to have to be resolved before we have any kind of special council permit.
Great. Now, turning your attention to, you talked about the planning and development. One of the functions of the community development director is to have an interrelationship or facilitate the coordination of a number of planning tools or documents call for it, both in the city charter and the book of ordinances, among them creating an inventory of city properties and so forth. But the other one is the annual publication of a capital improvements plan. That's kind of hit a rough patch of territory for the last few years in Gloucester, predating the current mayoral administration. How do you sort out the issues there to get that back up and running and become more operatively involved? And isn't there a burden of not doing it in terms of how your ratings go with Wall Street and your bond rating?
Well, to that question, there probably is. I'm not exactly sure how that works, but I will go back to your original question of the capital improvement plan. I think that if going back to the preceding mayoral administration, there was a focus on getting the West Parish School project complete, and the administration did not focus on a capital improvement plan that took into consideration all of the other needs the city has. And our government should have that, and the ordinance calls for it. And so it's going to be a very important part of this council's mission to make sure that that gets done, that we have a capital improvement plan, that we have a capital improvement committee that's supposed to advise the city on the plan, to help create the plan. You know, we have some obvious needs that need to be planned for. And that's, I think, when you mentioned the rating of the city and the financial structure, that's one of the things that, you know, that's important in the plan. What's on the horizon that the city's going to have to spend money on? We know that there's one more, at least one more elementary school, but there are other things. There's a fire and, you know, police stations need to be renovated or replaced. There is, you know, there are a number of things like that that need to be identified, put in the queue for financing and going forward. We're also, you know, right now we're working on the dam at Haskell Reservoir that needs additional monies. So there's just a lot of stuff that needs to be put up on the list of things to get done. And it needs to be orderly, and the capital improvement plan is designed to do just that.
Great. Well, let's hope that you can reclaim the my understanding was that the group, and I actually served on it for a period of time, but that the it became more of a rubber stamp kind of thing for whatever the mayoral administration in power at the time chose to do, as opposed to sort of a quasi-independent group that looked at the total city, interviewed the department heads, and came up with, you know, their best judgment and sent that to the mayor. The mayor then streamlined it and sent it forward to the council. Somehow that changed from what it had been back in the days when Constantine Bileskis was chair, and then Don Fricklin and Mike Fahey and others, Paul Muniz among those. So hopefully you can get it back on track and find 7 or 8, 9 people who will serve on it, and we'll have you back. And when we have you back several months from now, you can tell us how it's going.
Okay. Well, I hope you asked me about that, because it is something that's on my list of things to converse with the mayor about, and I think that's very important. Well, I think one quick thing about that, you know, capital improvement plan spans, you know, many mayoral administrations. It should be what's right for the city, not just for who's the particular mayor at a particular time, and I think we all need to focus on that. So.
Well, it's true. I mean, the danger of having a plan that is not vetted accurately through a sounding group, whether it's a capital improvements or a financial advisory or what have you, is that when you go to bond rating, the people who are going to buy the bonds, they want to understand the risk that's associated with payback of the bond that they're buying. And if you're a city or town and you don't list all of your liabilities but only, you know, show some of them, there are those who would view that in a very dim way, and that's not the best way to do business as far as full disclosure and transparency for cities and towns. And that's what I think the danger Gloucester has right now if they don't get the train back on the tracks, if you will.
Correct. And I think we've got a great opportunity right now. Obviously, you know, our finances are stable. There's a great challenge in the next coming up budget for making sure they stay stable. But because we're starting from a place of stability, we should really build on that. And I think we can. And I think the current administration wants to do that. So I think we'll have a good result on that.
Great. Great, Paul. Well, thank you for being a guest. And we'll have you back in a month or two. And you can give us a kind of a progress report on how things are going.
Sure, Josh, and thank you for asking city leaders to do this. I think it's really important to the voters to be able to have a place where they can hear some in-depth discussion of these issues. So thanks very much.
Thank you. Take care now.
You too.
Get
the skills you need to be a leader in sports and recreation. A master's in athletic administration from Endicott's Van Loan School prepares students for careers in schools, government agencies, nonprofit organizations, sports governing bodies, private sports clubs, and more. Van Loan's athletic administration master's program is 100% online with affordable tuition. Try a class before fully enrolling. Visit vanloan.endicott.edu/athleticadmin today.
Harrington's Trophy and Awards has been rewarding the North Shore for over 25 years. Hi, I'm Kevin Harrington.
And I am Marty Harrington, and we are known for our local family business, providing custom trophies, plaques, screen printing, embroidery, and much more. We offer a variety of services such as engraving wedding gifts, medals for charity walks, youth sports trophies and uniforms. From the newest style performance wear to your everyday work shirts, we are your one-stop shop. Whether it's a fantasy football, warm-up suits for your team, end-of-the-year banquet gifts, or recognizing excellence, we pride our business on our exceptional customer service and quality products. Located in Lynn, or visit our website at harringtontrophy.com.
Fabulous Fridays and Sunday brunch are back at the Gloucester House. World-renowned for its lobster dishes and fresh seafood specialties, the Gloucester House Restaurant, 63 Rogers Street, uses only locally caught, fresh North Atlantic seafood, offering traditional dining as well as catering to your private function needs. There is something for everyone and every occasion at the Gloucester House. Owned and operated by the Linquata family since 1959, they offer fabulous Friday lunch and dinner specials. And don't forget Sunday brunch from 10 to 2. For more information, go to GloucesterHouse.com.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're thinking of replacing the windows in your home, you should look at the Anderson Woodwright double hung insert window, which comes with rich wood interiors in oak, pine, or maple. Quite simply, Anderson is the most trusted window in America. That's why we've been selling them for 57 years. Please see the Anderson Woodwright windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up. Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our next guest is Ken Hecht, who is the Ward 2 counselor in Gloucester. Ken, welcome to the program.
Hey, Josh, happy Friday to you.
Same. Glad you're feeling better. I heard you had a good outing at the safari in Africa, but now you're back into the swing of things with being a city councilor. Remind the listening audience who you are with a brief bio, and then we can get into some questions.
Yeah, new as of January 1, new Ward 2 Councilor, Gloucester. Ward 2 is downtown. It goes from the fort up to the hill and up to George's and across to Market Basket. So it's a really small area, but high density. And includes all the downtown Main Street, Rogers Street, Commercial, the heart, and I think the soul of Gloucester. So a lot going on there, a lot going on.
Good. What, if we were to say, give us the snapshot or viewpoint of a day or a month or something in the life of a new ward councilor, what has that experience been like for you? I know there's a certain learning curve and orientation and wandering around and meeting with people. Tell us what that's been like for you and include as much examples of the types of training or forums for training and so forth that you've been exposed to thus far.
Right. I enjoy this type of thing, but I will say it's drinking out of a fire hydrant, without a doubt. Drinking out of a fire hydrant because there's so much to learn. I was placed on the Budget and Finance Standing Committee, which is very good for me. I like that stuff. But, for example, going over the budgets, you know, we have a $122 million total budget, including enterprise initiatives such as water and sewer. So when you're on the Budget and Finance Standing Committee, literally in May, I'm going to sit with each and every department head and go over each budget line item by line item, paper clips, pens, pencils, you know, everything. So that's going to be a tremendous learning experience in addition to me, you know, spending 2 hours with the city auditor already, which really was time well spent to understand how the city works, how the bills get paid, how budgets get set, free cash. I mean, it's really the inner workings of, you know, how our government works and how they pay the bills, how we get our revenue, and what we can do to improve things. That's what I'm trying to form from all this financial data that I'm, you know, absorbing is, okay, so how do we do better? How do we do better for our citizens? How do we get, you know, more money in the door without causing a riot? And how do we make sure we're, you know, controlling the expenses as best we can? And then how do we make sure also that, you know, we've accumulated debt as a city? How do we pay off the debt while improving things for our people? This is, you know, pulling a rabbit out of a hat kind of thing. So, you know, a lot to be done, a lot to understand, but then really to be, you know, disciplined and forward thinking with respect to the finances of our city.
Well, and you come from business and industry, from a real estate development background, engineering and so forth, where you have profit and loss statements. But the rules for what you're in now are vastly different. You don't, in the public sector, in the private sector, you don't have unfunded liabilities, and you have a bunch of them in the public sector. And there's quite a bit more bureaucracy involved in the planning, execution, and control points of an enacted budget. So when I used to teach finance, I used to say if you went grocery shopping, you wouldn't write a separate checkout for the carrots and another one for the meat and another one for the paper goods. But in essence, that's kind of how it works in government, unfortunately. So it gets a lot more complicated because of the control points that the state and local levels have put in to ensure that the taxpayers' money is properly spent.
And I've been impressed by that, Josh.
Yeah.
Two hours with the city auditor, Kenny Costa. He's a great guy, and he really, like, there's no check that's written that he doesn't approve.
Well, and it's the good thing about Gloucester, and this isn't typical in all cities and towns across the Commonwealth, is that the auditor is an agent of the city council, the legislative branch. You'll find in some cities that the auditor is part of the executive branch, and that makes for, you know, I'm not saying that the transactions would happen differently, but there have been plenty of times that I remember in public administration when it was to my benefit that the auditor was part of the legislative branch, because you know, they sort of regulated what transactions could happen and not happen, and they to some level are become a referee, if you will, even though that's not what they desire to be. But it helps.
That's right. I mean, it's a very systematized approach, and you know, it's very tightly controlled.
Yeah.
So I was very happy to see that. You know, free cash discussions of what to use free cash for. That, you know, any time that free cash is to be used, that goes to the city council.
Yeah.
You know, every time.
You want to spend it. If you spend it, you want to do it on a one-time basis for a one-time cost, as opposed to something that becomes an ongoing cost and then becomes a draw against the margin.
You don't use it for operating. That is correct.
Yeah. I saw that you had posted on social media that there is an application for a phone where that connects to public works work order related projects or what have you, where a citizen can drive by, see, having downloaded this application, a citizen can walk by and see, drive by and see a sign that's down, or a huge pothole, or any kind of thing like that. They can take a picture of it, get into this app, and send it on its way, and it'll find its way to I guess the ward counselor, but also the DPW director, and that person who submitted it can track it and see that it gets done. Tell us about that and how it works better than I've just explained it, and why that's such a significant thing for cities to have.
Well, our citizens, in my mind, are our customers, okay?
Yep.
And the most efficient way that we can satisfy our customers' needs there's a pothole, or your snowplow's not done correctly, or a fence is down, or whatever. Whatever, you know.
Well, the truck went by and didn't pick up my purple bag, yeah.
Yeah, what trash collection. You can just go, and if you download onto your phone, see, click, fix. You literally take a picture of it, send it in, and it goes on a list immediately at the DPW, and these things get done. I mean, unless they're not doable, but, I mean, it's reportable. People, it creates responsibility. It creates a record. And as you say, people can follow up on it. More than one person can be on the report. In other words, you know, two or three neighbors could get together and say, you know, we're all reporting this together.
Yeah.
So there's responsibility that's created, and it's been a tremendously effective tool because the DPW, you know, they want to do a good job. You know, we've got terrific people in the city.
Well, Mike Hill does a great job.
Yeah, and this and what happens is when you're able to use these kinds of technology things, you know, in before technology, and I'm happy to talk to anybody, but people would talk to the ward counselor who would talk to the head of the DPW, the head of DPW would talk to whoever's responsible, and then that person would do it. And that's a lot of communication, a lot of time, a lot of strain on the system, where now this is a direct line between the citizens and the DPW to get things done quickly and efficiently, which frees up all of us to be more creative, to think about more visionary things, and to say, okay, where are we going as a city, and to allocate, you know, a percentage of our time towards visionary activities, to setting goals and achieving them that are good for the city. So it's a double win.
So when someone in your ward, if Bob Alves sees something and he calls in that the Go Slow Children sign on Perkins Street is hanging by one screw, he takes a picture and sends it. Do you get automatically copied on that? Or do you see it on as a post function, you know, these are the things we did this month, and Perkins Street was on the list.
I don't get automatically copied on it.
Okay.
There may be a part of that app that I or haven't gotten there yet.
Yeah.
You know, to figure out what kind of automatic. I mean, there's so much to learn. I've been on the job for 23 days or something. But I wanted to get that C-Click fix in the hands. I just got feedback from one of the citizens who used it and was thrilled and, you know, texted me and said, it's fixed! Exclamation point. You know, like magic.
Yeah.
Magic, you know? So it's a great tool. And I hope, you know, more and more of our citizens could see, click, fix. See, click, fix. Download it right to your cell phone. Goes right to the DPW and makes it happen very efficiently. It's a terrific tool.
Well, I know years ago when I worked in the school department, we had a work order system, and, you know, people would submit a work order, and it would go into a pile, and one of the things that we did is we said, well, we're going to provide a work order report. We're going to sign a code to it. One means we're going to do it in 2 weeks. Two means it involves a bigger setup operation, like a school vacation or something. Three means we need to go acquire or reprioritize funds because it's significantly cost, and four might be something like it's a capital outlay thing, and we have to plug that into a long-term plan. But it was important to get that back to the person so they knew where they stood, as opposed to the perception that that it just goes into a big black hole and nobody does anything. So I think that the notion that
this is the anti-big black hole, yeah.
Well, it is. I would have loved if we'd had a system like that 20 years ago, but we'll take progress in the time frame it comes. You're on the finance committee, and you've got a lot of different things that are coming before you. Anything hot right now that you really feel you need to share with us? And if not, can you tell us a little bit about some of the formalized training that you've had as a new counselor?
Yeah, I mean, two of the bigger things coming at us this year are, you know, how to deal with recreational marijuana, stores, no stores, if there are stores, where they're going to be, and two, the Fuller School site, you know, affordable housing. You know, I'm big into affordable housing. How do we get the most units for the people that are most hurting.
And Fuller is in your ward, or is that in the Councilor Blank's ward?
Yeah, no, that's in my ward.
Okay.
And the existing Y is also in my ward. So, you know, it's front and center.
Okay.
So those are two of the biggies. And then East Gloucester, we're going to do a rezoning. East Gloucester is going to come before us this year. That is, you know, it was taken out of the, most of East Gloucester was taken out of the DPA.
Yeah.
So that's coming our way. And those are just the things that are sort of already on the tracks. And I want to put some other things on the tracks as well in terms of bigger visionary things to think about. And then in terms of training, I went to a Mass Municipal Association seminar just before, you know, the inauguration, and invested a day with 100-something other newly elected city council people from across the state. That was amazing. That was just a huge learning experience. And then president of the council, Paul Lundberg, is doing a great job. He, you know, had a two-hour, you know, full council session just about learning and going through the charter and procedures and all Robert's Rules of Order, and, you know, just a million things. Former President Shalino got together with myself and Jen Holmgren before the inauguration and, you know, showed us some of the ropes with the city clerk there. Interesting that the city clerk's office also works for the city council.
So yes. Yeah.
The auditor and the city clerk's office work for the city council, which, you know, is very interesting structure.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot going on, a lot of learning, but I'm looking forward to get this, you know, learning under my belt. I'm always going to be learning because it's every week you learn, but, you know, learn enough that I can be contributory and then really start, you know, doing things that I hope are a little bit more on the visionary side.
Well, you hear people say so often, you ought to run government like a business. And while there are some applications of the business world that can be applied in the public setting, for the most part, they're very different creatures. And it's not – there is no – there are no stockholders. There are no. There are more things that are not the same than are the same. And the goal, the mission, but in particular the literally hundreds of laws and rules that people have to follow to enact and to carry out the mission of the organization are pretty phenomenal. When I worked in Gloucester years ago, you had Westlaw, and they took up an entire bookcase out just outside my office. Those were the laws of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, many of them which had direct bearing on what I did on a day-to-day basis. In New Hampshire, they had one book.
Right.
And in New Hampshire was Live Free or Die, but they were very less regulated. So the complexity of government wasn't quite the same. A key difference is you talked about free cash. What becomes free cash here in Massachusetts, that the funding there automatically goes back to the taxpayer to reduce the tax rate the following year. It doesn't go. They don't put it aside in a fund. It's already netting out, so the taxpayers have to pay less. Fundamental difference. We could build a school in New Hampshire without necessarily going out to bid. It has its pluses and minuses, but it's not an easy proposition. And I'll tell you, you're going to learn something every week for as long as you're on the city council.
Oh, without a doubt. It's just so interesting what, you know, what the requests are, what comes before us, and, you know, the issues, and some of them highly emotional and, you know, really dealing, you know, with people's lives. It's you know, that's what it's all about. That's the exciting part. Having an impact, having a positive impact on the lives of our citizens. That's what it's all about. You know?
Well, I want to thank you for being a guest on Trending Now, and wish you the very best of success as you continue on in your journey and helping the citizens of Gloucester.
Well, thank you very much for having me, and have a great weekend.
You too, Ken. Take care now.
Thanks. Bye.
Bradford Tavern in Raleigh is unique, with modern touches in a rustic setting, offering the finest steaks, the freshest seafood, and many quality daily specials. Serving lunch and dinner, the Bradford Tavern is open Tuesday through Sunday, 11:30 a.m. to midnight, closed Mondays. The restaurant features two separate function rooms ideal for every need, including business meetings, bridal and baby showers, or any special event. The Bradford Tavern is located at 87 Haverhill Street, Route 133 in Rowley, and online at bradfordtavern.com.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. Our company has been proud to have supported high school sports on the North Shore for more than 30 years. Our student athlete program recognizes championship performance in the classroom and on the field. Moynihan Lumber is also committed to championship performance when it comes to meeting all your building and home improvement needs. And if you're planning to change your kitchen, please visit our kitchen cabinet showrooms at any of our three locations. In Beverly, North Reading, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at moynihanlumber.com.
Thank you. Good morning to you.
I was listening to the music on hold, and I'm reminded of the day when Al Swackler came back and yelled up for Arnold, and his wife had called him before lunch, and the song on the radio was "School's Out Forever," and I went, "Change that radio station." So,
like the Blizzard of '78.
Yeah. So how's it going this year for you?
Good. It's been a good school year, very robust school year. We have introduced all sorts of nice programs in science and in vocational tech at the high school. We've introduced more opportunities for teachers at the elementary school to collaborate together through what's called professional learning communities. We have been able to increase and match the needs for our English language learner students, the numbers of which had surged over the last couple of years. So we're making do, and we're moving forward as a district.
That's great. What are the big challenges? I know that there's a lot going on in terms of facilities, in terms of the study, an ongoing study about, you know, where it's the best location, and a need to rebuild or renovate or the sister school of West Parish, East Gloucester, that was built in 48 and 49. Give us an update on where you stand with that.
Sure. Your intro to it is just a little bit premature, but I'll explain in a second. About a year ago, we had been invited after an application into what's called an eligibility period, where the Massachusetts School Building Authority asks us to respond to some questions. We put a statement of interest, and lo and behold, they are on the verge now of inviting us into what's called the feasibility period, which means that we've met all the qualifications for an area, for a district and a community that should be eligible for the possibility of either a renovation, an addition, or even possibly a new school. There were about 90 applications statewide, 17 were accepted, and one of them, of course, was Gloucester, and in particular, we're looking at the East Gloucester Project. The East Gloucester Project, however, when we put in our application, we were also talking about the possibility of a consolidation between East Gloucester and veteran schools. East Gloucester, of course, is a little bit older. It's 1948. Veterans is 1955. But there is enough justification with respect to the facilities themselves that warrant both schools possibly being replaced. and building a slightly larger school of around 450 kids. So there's been no groundwork yet looking at possible sites. I mean, we may be talking in private conversation, but nothing formal.
Okay.
What happens, and I'll try to be quick, but what happens is February 14th, we go into Boston to the MSBA. They officially approve us enter into the feasibility study, and that's when we hire people to come out and begin to look at sites, engineers, architects, geologists, scientists, all these folks, to help us look for the most environmental and financially responsible solution to those two schools.
Do you expect to get a sweetheart of a deal on that day?
Will we get a sweetheart of a deal? The good thing about working with the MSBA is you play by their rules, but you can get, you know, Gloucester is eligible for close to a 58% reimbursement rate on parts of the project that are reimbursable. With respect to the West Parish project, overall cost was around $39 million, but it actually cost the city of Gloucester $24 million. And if you can build a 65,000 square foot building for $24 million and house 360 kids in there, I think we did a pretty good job.
Okay, I was making reference to it being on February 14th, but that's okay.
Okay.
Anyway, I know. That
well,
I'm sorry.
Hopefully, it'll be a sweet deal on Valentine's Day. We'll see what happens.
I know that you folks have been wrestling with transportation, and I don't know if that's even something you can talk about at this point, but. Is that something you're open to talk about?
Well, we were looking for the most economical, financially responsible way of providing transportation for our kids.
Yeah.
And currently we contract and lease buses, and we hire our own bus drivers. We did do some exploratory work, seeing if an outsource opportunity would be more economical for the school and for the schools and for the district, but it does not appear that's going to be the case. So it was exploratory. We looked at it, but it would not be really economically advantageous to make that move at this time. But you don't know unless you shop. Right?
Well, no, it's so true. I mean, the what happened years ago was the transportation provider did not, the city did not collect. They were lax in insisting that they get an annual performance bond, and because of that, when the company went belly up, a large company came in and said, "We'll do it, but it's going to cost you another $150,000." So
yeah,
the city walked away from it then, but you didn't have. Had you gone out to bid then, you would have had to pay the prevailing wage rate, which is based out of Boston, and I'm guessing that you don't pay that level now, and there are certain you can't be in the transportation business that you're not have a 15% markup, a profit markup, and you don't have that in the public sector if you're doing it yourself. So there are certain savings that you get, and I'm glad that you guys figured it all out, and you've got a way to continue to save the taxpayers' money.
Right. Well, that's you know, the bottom line is to provide as much quality service, whether it's transportation, academics, extracurriculars, or otherwise.
A lot of schools in the Commonwealth will contract it out because it's a pain in the neck to do, and it's not a responsibility that a superintendent or an operations or business manager really wants to have to be involved in on a day-to-day basis. But Gloucester puts that aside and does yeoman's work to the work aside, that they want to save the taxpayers' money, and they've had a history of finding ways to do that. So anyway, what else is happening this year? That your assistant superintendent Greg Bach is back. I talked to him on the phone the other day, and
yep.
I've known him since as far back as when I worked in the public sector, and that was back in the last century. So, but he's a great guy, and I'm glad that he's back on the team.
Right. Well, that's the great advantage of having Greg back. Of course, is the institutional knowledge, the history that he has with the district, the working relationships he has with so many people around the district. So it's a real benefit.
Yeah.
The previous fellow has moved on, became a superintendent, and to have Greg available to come back has really been terrific. There's a ton of work, probably more than any one person can handle, but if anyone can manage and keep all those balls in the air and juggle and make it happen well, he's certainly
he's
the right
great.
Guy for the job.
Yeah. What's do you have a lot of new staffing this year, or is it pretty how much of a turnover do you have, either administrative or professional staff, year to year? I mean, you're more volatile than most other municipal departments by nature of it being education, and
right.
How much does that impact you?
Yeah, well, we still have a relatively mature staff. I think going into this current school year, you know, upwards of 16 to 20 retirements across the board, and of course we've got about 285 teachers or so. It looks as though going into next school year, because we are getting involved in budget, the numbers are less. There aren't those many retirements for next year. So, you know, of course, the advantage of having, you know, mature teachers, the experience they bring to the craft, the advantage of them retiring is chances are you're in all likelihood going to be hiring somebody on a lower part of the pay scale, and that goes back into the budget and so on and so forth. But we don't see major trends in retirements, at least for projected for FY19.
Good. What are we looking at for the opioid crisis? How much does our schools involved? I know that there have been. I've interviewed some folks. Diana DeZoglio was on our program last year, and she had talked about meeting with area superintendents recently to talk about their concerns and, you know, ways that the state may be able to provide more funding on the education side of things. Any of that come across your desk, and anything that you want to share? Or?
The funding, no. Our response to substance use abuse is in no small way a matter of, you know, ethics and what needs to be done. In addition, the state had passed some legislation about a year and a half or so ago asking for a revitalized substance use slash abuse program in the schools, and we've done quite a bit, particularly last summer, in beefing up our health curriculum and our science curriculum to make sure that we are covering both the science and the sociology behind substance use and abuse and opioid addiction and all the rest. We were one of the four districts in the state to begin to use Narcan or have Narcan in our schools. It's part of a program called ESPERT, which is through the nurses. I don't remember exactly what it stands for, but it is it's part medicine and it's part psychology and it's part counseling. And as an added feature into our program, so that if there are children who are in need, we feel relatively fully equipped to handle it on our end. And, of course, everybody's concern, yours, mine, and everyone else, is that the opioid crisis is just that. It's pervasive. It's not just Gloucester. It's not just Massachusetts, but it's national. And we need to continue to be as vigilant as possible in educating our kids and in helping them to find the right treatment should they succumb to that horrible disease.
Great. What are some of the – we got probably, well, 3 minutes left. What else can you share with us about what's going on this year and how the students are doing, early success stories, or people getting accepted to colleges or what have you?
Right. Well, I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is we received about a $500,000 grant last year, and we had to spend it all by June the 30th, and it's for our vocational program at the high school, and it's for advanced manufacturing. Those machines probably hadn't been changed or modified since the early 70s or even before that.
Yeah.
And this was a Massachusetts capital grant, as I said, for $500,000, and we now have state-of-the-art machinery in our advanced manufacturing lab. And what that means is, whether you're a vocational kid or a math class or a physics class, you can go in onto the computers, you can design something. We have a second lab that has 3D printers, which means that you can build prototypes using 3D printers, and then you can go over to the advanced manufacturing with all the new and the latest machines, and you can actually manufacture the real thing. So this is an extraordinary opportunity for our students, both the vocational students and students who are taking the other academic courses, to really see what a project and production is about, starting with drawing something up to the finished product. And, you know, that's the kind of resources that you want to have, so kids aren't just sitting in class, you know, listening and talking, but they're making and doing and planning and problem solving and working together. And
quite a departure from chalk, talk, and test, huh?
Say it again?
I said it's quite a departure from chalk, talk, and test.
Yes, absolutely. And as I said, to repeat, that's where we want to go. There's no reason why kids in algebra class aren't building model homes, small ones. But yes, that's where you want them engaged. You want them planning, plotting, problem solving, and then having something tangible in their hands that they were able to do. That's where teaching and learning needs to go today, because that's what the market is calling for.
Yeah. That's great. That's great. And you're going to have a you're going to dust off and have Student Government Day this year.
Yes, yes. We're in the planning stages. I know that you in part are a little responsible for helping to resurrect that, and City Councilor Val Gilman put a little notice before the City Council, and it's an absolutely great idea. There are a number of people who remember what was done.
Yep.
We can use that as a basis and see what we can do to bring it up to date as well. But I know that the state government, Student Government Day is April the 6th. We'd like to target something for in and around that date, but make sure that we involve our local politicians and get our kids involved in talking and learning about how local city government works.
Well, it's great. I remember participating in it as a student, people got to be the police chief and the DPW director and the city clerk and the superintendent and the high school principal, and they followed them around for the day. And then there were meetings at night, a city council and a school board meeting, you passed resolutions, and it was an active day to do what you folks do every day, but to expose kids to that. And I think that I hope that you get a great deal of participation, and maybe some of our kids that do it now will be our leaders 5 and 10 years from now.
Absolutely, absolutely. We're that pipeline.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I want to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to be part of Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Maybe as you get into the budget season, we can have you back and share a few more thoughts with us.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Doctor. Bye.
Bye now.
Well, that takes care of that hour, and just about takes care of the month of January. We do have a program scheduled for next Friday. What you got lined up there?
Well, next week I have the second in our series of City Council Presidents. Beth Gerard, the President of the Salem City Council, will be a guest. Also, Jen Holmgren, a new City Councilman in Gloucester, will be a guest. Susan Curry, who is a colleague of mine, is a consultant dealing with social media and explain why that's important and how to maximize your return in terms of your nonprofit or government or business organization. And then the fourth guest is Kim Spanner, who's a Gloucester Rotarian, but she's chairman of the Polar Plunge Committee, and the following day is the 8th annual Polar Plunge at Cape Ann Moder in the side of Long Beach, and I will be there as the great big polar bear, and I will not be jumping in the water, but many people will, and it's to raise money to eradicate polio in our lifetime, so we're going to talk to her about that.
All righty, that's Josh Arnold. This is Trending Now. Our producer and engineer, as always, Bill Proposky. I'm Rick Moore. Bye-bye.